I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party, no politician. Not gotten confirmation nor denial from Americans for Prosperity whether they'll be in today. I know they've been busy. They're crisscrossing the state, taking care of all kinds of grassroots setups that they're involved with. So we will see if we've got our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity. This is a great group to get involved with if you're interested in seeing Mississippi move forward. More about that later. So check them out. You can go to Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook. I think that's where they post the majority of their stuff. Still got lots to get through today, though. Really some kind of a diverse set of topics. I was off yesterday. Had another pressing matter I had to take care of, so I've had a day. And anytime there's more than one day of news, there's certainly plenty of things to talk about. And my challenge is always to pull out some of the stuff that people aren't talking about. We'll talk a little bit about the shooter from the day before yesterday. Just because there's things, all of these kinds of topics, to be honest with you, so much of what people weigh in on with many issues I find kind of aggravating. And that's not a judgy thing. It's just, I don't know, we miss the mark on so many different things. To me, as an observer, outside of this political system of the two-party nut jobberies going after each other, we seem to really be missing the plot. So we'll talk about that. Also some... there's a little bit of interesting monkeypox news, and we've also got the World Economic Forum. I think they're still meeting. I'm not sure if we're quiet for a minute. Maybe we can hear. Apparently, there were 1,500 private jets used to take these people to Davos to discuss our carbon footprint. So if we're really quiet, we might be able to hear 1,500 private jets firing up. That's how we'll know when they're leaving the World Economic Forum. But I'm going to have some fun with the World Economic Forum this year because, as I have said, our own Senator Roger Wicker is attending the World Economic Forum. So we'll listen to a few clips of what he's listening to these days. Very interesting stuff. Now, I wanted to start with a handy kitchen hack. This is something that has happened to me recently. I try to bring some positive things to you. I've had a fruit fly explosion at my house. I do this a lot. Just basically every year when the temperature changes, I do not alter my behavior, and I am a fruit eater in particular. And so I quite often have apple cores or banana peels, mango rinds, those kinds of things in my trash for an extended period of time. I don't generate a whole lot of trash because I don't eat a ton of stuff from bags and boxes. So a trash bag that I put stuff into, and I'm single, so it takes a while for the trash to get out. And so invariably every year I end up with fruit flies. This thing's just wildly annoying. Do you know how to get rid of fruit flies very quickly? I discovered this hack a few years ago. I'll pass it on to you. And maybe everybody knows this, but I think it's just fantastic. If you take a water bottle, I think it's most interesting to watch if you use some kind of a clear bottle. But I'll use like a water bottle. Put a little bit of apple cider vinegar in the bottom of it, and then drop a few pieces of fruit, banana peels, things like that, down into the jar. And then just take a piece of paper and make a small funnel at the top and tape that to the top of the bottle. And what happens is these fruit flies are attracted to the fruit and the vinegar at the bottom of this bottle. They go in through the funnel, But these stupid fruit flies can't figure out how to go back out of that small funnel hole to get back out of the jar. And they go in there. You know, they're out there. What, do they live like a year? I mean, excuse me, a day? It's just an interesting hack. It's always interesting to me. Maybe I subconsciously create a fruit fly problem every year so I can be amazed by the way to fix it. You can't catch these things. You can't swat them all away. They're so light. But this will get rid of fruit flies very quickly. And I'm on day about 1.5 and didn't notice a single fruit fly this morning. So it's one of those things where you go and you start to pull the trash bag out. And all of a sudden, there's just almost like a black puff of smoke comes out of it. And it's just all of the fruit flies that have been enjoying my garbage for so long. But this little hack is great. No pesticides required. No hassles. You just get to watch your own, set up your own little fruit fly colony in a clear bottle and watch them all die. Quotes of the day today. I have my daily Carlins. This is quotes by George Carlin that seem to be becoming more and more prevalent. They're just a couple of fantastic ones here that I ran across, some very short ones. George Carlin said, "Inside every cynical person is a disappointed idealist." And that describes me to a T. I am an idealist. I actually can believe in the goodness of human beings and the greatness of society. I ran across a video this morning on LinkedIn. It is this kid playing t-ball. Got to be about 6 years old. And he's walking up to the tee, and they start playing a little bit of bump music. This is just at some, you know, some small park somewhere. Yeah, we know, just kids playing t-ball. And so they play a little bit of bump music, and this kid just breaks out into full dance, moving his hips around, moving his arms around, jumping around like a wild man. He's just dancing to this song. It's only on for about 30 seconds as he's walking up to the tee. And it is just fantastic. I think I watched this thing like 5 times this morning. People who think my show is too dark and intense, that's the kind of stuff I live for. It is hilarious. And the funniest thing is, you know, they cut the music off as he comes up to bat. I guess this is just some little kind of background music, you know, a little transition between batters in this 6-year-old t-ball league. And his coach puts the ball on the tee, kind of adjusts his body around so he hits it in the right way, and this kid smacks the crap out of the ball, and then he just starts running. You know, these are the kinds of things I look at and I say, you know, this is really what life is about, what life should be about. Really just having fun and enjoying yourself and being a kid. And it is politics. It's interesting. I do a political talk radio show. It's politics that destroys every bit of that. Most all of the aggravations that I know of people around. Now, we've all got annoying things. You're driving down the highway, you get a flat tire. That's a pain in the butt. But most of the, you know, the big, really kind of oppressive, the inflation. People struggling right now financially. I saw a guy walking down the highway this morning or crossing the highway this morning with a gas can. I believe we're going to start seeing more and more of that as time goes on, as people can't afford to fill their cars up anymore, largely. And all of these miseries are created by your government and your political class. And for the love of God, I sit here as an observer and I watch the two-party nut jobs think it's always the other guy's fault. I am a watch a kid play a t-ball game and dance on his way up to the plate guy. That's who I am. I am a cynical person because I'm a disappointed idealist. I believe we would all get along fine were it not for politics. I believe we would all share much more prosperity on the individual level were it not for politics, politicians, regulations, all of the things that our political class does to us. I am quite the idealist. I believe that freedom would create all kinds of great things, but neither party is really interested in the freedom. They're interested in their side getting power. Inside every cynical person is a disappointed idealist. That's me, a disappointed idealist. And I love this one, too. There's another George Carlin quote. He said, "I love and treasure individuals as I meet them. I loathe and despise the groups they identify with and belong to." George Carlin, we're kindred spirits, for sure. "I love and treasure individuals as I meet them. I loathe and despise the groups they identify with and belong to." Nothing turns rational, fun, nice, caring, considerate, compassionate, human beings into just the worst among us than when they are trying to carry water for their side. And then the shooting issue is kind of one of those things. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. A couple other quotes. Dr. Aaron Kearney said, he's a MD, he said, last year we conducted the largest experiment on human subjects in the history of the universe. Without consent, that experiment failed. The U.S. Ministry of Truth, this is a Twitter account that was set up. Just genius. How could I not think of things like this? U.S. Ministry of Truth, this is after the shooting. So I would imagine this has to do with the explosion on social media, on the gun side, on the anti-gun side, everybody just duking it out after this tragedy in Texas on social media. U.S. Ministry of Truth tweeted out, our nation needs your angry, accusatory, hot take tweets right now more than anything else. Double down. Froth at the mouth. Press your thumbs through the glass on your screen. It's good for you. And Zuby. Zuby, this is an English rapper. I do pay attention to his Twitter account because he puts out small little things. A very intelligent guy, does some great little quotes. He says, when people get too deep into politics, they tend to lose their humanity. Everything becomes about scoring points for, quote, their team, unquote. Empathy, decency, and compassion be damned. He is exactly right. Politics is destroying this country, and just look at the people who are benefiting from it. Look at the Roger Wickers who are over there sitting at the World Economic Forum while you duke it out and pay the high gas prices, high food prices, high rent prices, high insurance prices right now. You think about the Nancy Pelosi's. It's across the spectrum. You look at these people. And for us, we lose our humanity fighting battles for one of the most corrupt classes, certainly in my lifetime. This has got to be peak corruption in this country right now, yet nothing has changed on the landscape. Everybody rooting for their team. We're heading into midterms, and everybody's dutifully lining up behind their side of the political class. When people get too deep into politics, they tend to lose their humanity. Everything becomes about scoring points for their team. Empathy, decency, and compassion be damned. Amen, Zuby. Be right back.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best.
I want a girl with shoes. I usually like to start off shows with some financial news. Markets, I wasn't paying attention yesterday. Markets are up a little bit today. I don't know where the cryptocurrencies are, but I know they're still about 50% of what they were a few months ago. But I did see it run across an interesting chart. The Dow has had its worst start, or the worst losing streak. I believe we've had 8 weeks of Dow down weeks. Obviously, sometimes during the days, we've had some pops here. You always have rallies, whether it's a bull market or a bear market. But I believe the last 8 weeks is the worst 8 weeks for the Dow Jones Industrial Average since, anyone, 1923. Federal Reserve and Joe Biden tell you, everything's fine, nothing to pay attention here, move along. But I did see a very interesting chart. I don't know how many people remember or paid attention to or care about the fact that the Federal Reserve chairman around the, well, not the chairman, but the bank heads, you know, the Fed is in several different divisions or districts around the country. Several of the guys heading up some of these districts were found to be very well positioned in some of their stock trades prior to Federal Reserve announcements. And the Fed, with just a word, with just a sentence, and this is why the Federal Reserve, a central bank, is so dangerous, is because we have one guy. He's the most powerful man in the world. His name is Jerome Powell. Most people don't even know who he is. He could come out today and within a sentence or two, he could destroy the value of your home and your 401k. Everybody's out there freaking out about the murder rates, crime rates going up. I did a show about this last week, I think it was. It's 3,100 murders by strangers in this country every year out of 330 million people. We're all incensed, worried about this. We don't want to stop at a gas station. Yet we've got this one human being who could just come out, could put out a tweet. He could come out and just say a couple of sentences. He could go on to CNBC and do an interview, and he could turn your 401k into ashes. Could half the value of your house. Now, I think we all deserve these things, to be honest with you. But that's how much power this one person has. Anyway, some of these guys running some of these Federal Reserve banks around the country were caught trading pretty significant amounts of money ahead of what the Fed announced it was going to do. Strangely enough, they did really well, did very, very well on these trades. And so, much like politicians who get caught doing this all the time, they come out and say that they're not going to do it anymore. They pinky swear now they're not going to do it. I believe they passed some kind of new... They needed an ethics law. They needed to actually codify, we're not going to inside trade the information that we have that nobody else has. Jerome Powell, if he wanted to, could short the stock market and come out and, you know, quadruple his money in an afternoon if he wanted to. Their announcements have such great importance to the way the market goes because we're a nation addicted to debt, and so the biggest debt peddlers get to call the tune. But they were busted, and I think it was last fall, maybe last October, where they said, okay, all right, we won't trade stocks anymore. All you little people are whining so much, it's really gotten to be kind of a pain to us. Quit your whining. We won't trade stocks anymore. Now, nobody's really paying attention to what goes on behind the scenes. These are the kinds of people who can have offshore accounts and trade through, you know, offshore corporations. So if they want to abuse us, they will, and I'm sure that they are. But this rule came, and I believe in October of last year, somewhere in the fall of last year, they did a pinky swear ethics clause into their operating agreement that said they would not trade stocks for themselves. Strangely enough, that was right around the peak of the market. If you look at a chart, this chart was put up. So what I'm wondering is the Federal Reserve now punishing us for calling them out on their trades? Did they just come out and say, all right, if we can't make any money, then we'll be damned. Ain't nobody making any money. So I've told you the stock market will go down when all of the people in power have got their money out. Then they'll pull the plug. They'll let all the little people ride it down in their 401ks and their ETFs and their investment accounts. They'll let you ride it all the way down to the basement. And then at the basement, when you're desperate, desperate to sell because you can't take any more pain, they step back in and go, all right, I'll give you 3 cents on the dollar for that. And this is how the game, it's just lather, rinse, repeat. So the Federal Reserve may be punishing us for calling them out on their insider trading. You look at a chart, it's just one of those things. I have friends who say, oh, all these people are just incompetent. It's not corruption, Mike. It's not conspiracy. It's just that they're absolutely incompetent. The only argument that I have with that, there are a lot of stupid people in government, no doubt about it. Just watch a Oval Office address from our current president or vice president or any of the people in the cabinet, our transportation secretary, Mayor Poot. Just look at, there's a whole lot of stupid people in our government, no doubt about it. But it is coincidental. I mean, I've known a lot of dumb people in my life. We all have. A lot of times they suffer the consequences of their stupidity, don't they? I mean, the things don't always turn out their way. With this class of real idiots, they always seem to come out on the winning side of things. That's always very interesting to me. For something that's not planned, it's not a conspiracy, it's just bumbling, fumbling idiots, they sure do well. In down markets, they do great. In up markets, they do great. Good economic times, they do great. Bad economic times, they do great. They lock down the whole country, shut down Main Street across the country, and yet somehow these people, the bumblers, they ended up just minting money during the pandemic lockdowns. It's just, as I say, I'm a coincidence theorist here. Not a conspiracy theory. I just think it's a coincidence. Everything that happens, this class of people always ends up on the right side of it, particularly when it comes to finances. The real question, though, is, are they happy? This is where I retreat to my safe space. Anytime I see somebody that's doing significantly better than I am financially, maybe they're taking great vacations, and I've really decided. I don't know if you've seen the new Lotus. I think it's called the Emira. It's kind of an entry-level Lotus car. It's a beautiful car, but if I were to see somebody buy that and I was struck with some level of jealousy, I always retreat to, well, yeah, but but are they happy? That's where it really counts. Anyway, I think the Fed may be punishing you all for calling them out and busting open on their little corrupt game. You know, when you get a bunch of criminals and you call them out on their stuff, they will fire out of that corner that you backed them into, and that may be the case. As I say, could just be another coincidence, but market's taken a pounding since they were forced to get out of it. Anyway, I'm going to come back. I wanted to talk real quickly about a Charles Hughes Smith article. He's one of my favorite writers. He appears on different sites, and I never know it's him, but I'll always click on a headline, and then I find out it's his writing. It's about the consent of the governed. I thought that was pretty interesting, and then we're going to get into just a little bit about this shooting in Texas, just because I have something to add that's really not covered anywhere else. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'll show you how incompetent our government is. I don't know if I should think this is a good thing or a bad thing. It's kind of funny, though. I have a lot of things, as all of us do, drafted out of my checking account. Many drafts that are scheduled come through, obviously. We all do these things, streaming services, subscriptions I have to just about anything comes through. Never a problem, right? Sometimes I forget. You open your account up and you go, oh, holy cow, I forgot about that. But everything goes through without a hitch. Every single 6 months, I have a post office box. Every 6 months, the USPS, the U.S. Postal Service, attempts to draft my fee for my post office box. And every single time, it is rejected by my bank for essentially a fraud warning. I start getting texts. Hey, did you authorize this? It's $45. Did you authorize this $45 to USPS Postal Service or whatever the thing is? And to be honest with you, I don't usually reply to these things on my text. You know, I'm a little leery of anybody reaching out to me on my phone unsolicited and telling me that they're my bank. You know, I'm not a tech guy. I'm scared if I say yes that I've somehow opened some Pandora's box into all of my accounts by some hacker. But it's just funny to me, every single time this charge becomes rejected by my bank, something within the federal system can't even draft an account for $45 every 6 months without it being an issue. Now, I should probably thank my bank. Anytime the federal government wants to take a nickel out of my account, I do consider it fraud. Now, with the Postal Service, I will admit I have voluntarily signed up for a service with them. I want a little box where some of my mail can go that's convenient for me in my daily travels, and I'm willing to pay them $90 a year for that. That's basically the only voluntary exchange I have with our government, but I have consciously made this decision. It just cracks me up. They can't even draft my account. But I certainly hope that any time the federal government's messing around in my accounts, and they have before, that I would get a fraud alert warning, because it is. It's a fraudulent system, and I do not consent to any other withdrawals. I'll pay the $90 a year for my post office box. Outside of that, hands off. And that brings me to this piece. This is a piece by Charles Hughes Smith. He writes Of Two Minds blog. And the title of this thing was The Consent of the Governed is Slipping Away. That's clickbait to me. Says the realization that we're not actually being represented at the federal level has eroded the consent of the governed for the national government. The foundation of any government is the consent of the governed. Democracies and republics are founded on the consent of the governed, earned via representational or direct democracy. Those who have a say and a stake in the system will give their consent to the government, even if an opposing view is the majority, because their opinion is part of the governance structure. He goes on to say, even totalitarian states ultimately depend on the consent of the governed as repressive states that lose legitimacy cannot imprison or kill a majority of their populace or restore legitimacy by coercion once the populace has nothing left to lose and the organs of state oppression realize the regime is doomed. I believe this is about where we are. Right now, I would say that most Americans still have something to lose, but be patient. Charles Hugh Smith's right. It feels like the consent of the governed is slipping away in the U.S. The reason is so obvious, we dare not acknowledge it or discuss it. Those in power, elected and unelected, the Faucis of the world, only give lip service to serving the public interest and common good. Beneath this flimsy facade of PR, every action serves the interest of a wealthy, politically potent elite or the self-interest of those in power. Commoners have no real say in governance. And this is absolutely true. And, you know, I've really thought, I don't know if you're a fan of The Office, the old NBC with Steve Carell, the NBC series. But at one point, if you're not familiar with it, most people are. If you don't like The Office, I don't know if we can be friends. You can vote for Joe Biden if you want to. I'm going to try to convince you of why that was a mistake. I pretty much am to the point now where I'm just trying to convince anybody voting at all is a mistake. Because to me, see, voting is giving that consent. It's saying, all right, I want to play in this game. And so you just, you know, seems to me what, you know, a lot of people say, you can't complain if you don't vote. Well, how ridiculous is that? If I'm not participating in this insanity, then I'm the one who has the right to. It is you who granted it legitimacy by getting up, going to the polls and pulling a lever. But this office thing was, the main character, Steve Carell's character, Michael Scott, gets in trouble financially. He's run up a bunch of credit card debt. He's at the end of his rope. Got some financial difficulties, and so he doesn't understand what bankruptcy is, so he hears you can declare bankruptcy, so he just does this.
I declare bankruptcy!
And somebody from the office goes, you know, that's not really legally binding there, right? You have to do more than that. It's, but I feel like, you know, can I not just say, I do not consent? And just be done with this whole system? It seems like in a free country, in the United States of America, I can just say, you know what? I'm out. I've been this way for a long time. I've withdrawn my consent probably about 12 to 15 years ago. Trump got me back in with a vote, I have to admit. He did trick me. He tricked me into participating one more time in 2016. And I did go cast a vote for him. And he showed me, he taught me a valuable lesson. Donald Trump taught me a valuable lesson. Abandon all hope, ye who believe you can save the system by electing somebody else to run this monstrosity. So I'm just wondering if I can just remove my consent. You know, I've been looking for somewhere to move outside of the United States because I really don't feel safe in this country any longer. But the difference to me is very different than the vast majority of people. It's not because of crime. I did these statistics last week. Murders are horrific. Violent crime is on the rise. We've driven people into horrible desperation. The ridiculous war on drugs has kept constant violence on our streets that was completely unnecessary. The exact same way it happened during 1920s Prohibition. We're just too stupid to see it this time. So instead of the 13-year experiment with alcohol prohibition, we're now on a 50-year war on drugs that's just getting more and more intense by the year. But I don't fear being murdered by a stranger because I can parse through statistics. This is what was so mystifying to me during COVID. People just can't parse out risk-reward, risk-benefit analysis. They're just incapable of doing it. Somebody told you to be fearful of something, you be fearful of it. Don't do the math and say, oh my God, my child's got more of a chance of getting struck by lightning than dying of COVID. Why in the hell would I put them in a mask every day? But the people can't do that. You're told to fear, so you fear. I can do math. I may get gunned down in the parking lot today. I may get hit by a bus. More likely to get hit by a bus than to be murdered by a stranger. Yet we all freak out about being murdered by a stranger. Now, this may feel inappropriate or dismissive of what just took place in Texas. But tens of millions of school children go to school every day, and these horrific, tragic events happen, and they call our attention to it. And I read a story today on the New York Post where this writer was talking in there, and she made some decent points in there. But it was at one point she said, this is going to continue. It's going to be you or somebody you know very soon. Now, this is ridiculous. As tragic as this is, I don't mean to bring this up personally, but I've had a sister who was murdered. I am no stranger to losing a loved one to violence and even gun violence. But I understand, I don't not feel safe in the United States because I'm worried about getting murdered by some random stranger. I fear our government. You know, I don't want to ever get into a situation. There's a whole lot of people out there that are really gung-ho for the Civil War. Oh, they talk so tough. They can't wait until it's game on. They don't realize that, you know, at some point during that, you're going to have to shoot a cop or a soldier, probably. I doubt many people have an appetite for that. I certainly don't. And so we'll probably end up devolving into a complete police state here. I'd like to just announce, I withdraw my consent and they just leave me alone. Oh, okay, that guy over there, he's out. We're going to leave him alone. We're not going to give him anything. Just wait till he comes to us begging for something. We're not going to give him anything. That's fine with me. You can keep all my old Social Security money. I don't even want that. I just want out. But I think at this point, you know, maybe I just need to wait for the first state to secede. Because I want to stay in the United States. I love this country. And with, despite all of its flaws, it's really still one of the best places to be. It's just that we have decided to let it slowly devolve into a police state. And I got to tell you, you people on the right are largely responsible for much of that. Now the left is taking that baton and running full speed with it. They are the anchor leg of this relay to the police state. The right took the first three turns, and the left has grabbed the baton, and now they're running it to the finish line. But you know, our government, as Charles Hugh Smith says, it is now hopelessly corrupt. Absolutely hopelessly corrupt. I'd like to keep my citizenship here, but I think I'm ready for a state. Maybe a state that could stand up, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to stay here in Mississippi. Mississippi will not be the state that secedes from the United States. When it's all falling apart and realize it's going to be those states who got their financial houses in order, the Floridas, the Texases, that are able to do that. Mississippi is a welfare state. And not just because we have a lot of people on welfare, because we have a political class that is addicted to welfare spending. So I'm going to have to go find out. Florida sounds great. I got to be honest with you. Last couple of years has really made Florida shine for me. Maybe that's where I need to end up going. Outside of that, wherever I can withdraw my consent from what's going on the federal level, I'm there.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And we've got Starla Brown in from Americans for Prosperity. We'll do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour next hour. Starla, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Mike, good to see you this week. Just coming back from Missouri and our all-staff conference. We had over 500 people get together, and we are pumped up and fired up, this Americans for Prosperity group, our Libre team, you know, our Libre initiative team, which is just Hispanic outreach, and our Concerned Veterans for America team. And so we're excited for what we're going to be doing over the next 12 months, if you will, but especially the next 6 months. We've got a lot of things going on.
Well, we need you. The economy is sputtering, to say the very least. I tell you what, it looks pretty ominous out there.
It does. It does. But I think what I see, at least in talking to people and then and being with our colleagues from all over the United States, and you know, we're in 35 states, but soon looking to do some limited expansions in some other states. But I will say to you, people are in a scenario where they're waking up, and it's people who wouldn't normally wake up to everything, but their lives are being so impacted by this economic train wreck. That's the only way to describe it, right? With inflation and everything that's going on. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit later today about an event we're going to be having coming up here in the state of Mississippi. It's going to be, I think, an interesting event for people to come out and join us. We haven't set the date yet, but I'll give you a little preemptive on that. But what I heard from all of our colleagues all across the country, and, you know, like I said, 35 states were solidly represented there, and our team at National, is that they're hearing consistently the same message. People are tired. They're fed up. They're hurting. And some of the stories are heartbreaking. And, you know, speaking of heartbreaking, I don't want to be remiss and not talk about where we are as a nation this week. It's been a tough week.
Yeah.
It's been a tough week. And I just want to say that, you know, from a personal standpoint, and then, you know, even on behalf of our organization, our hearts just really go out. They're just broken when we heard about the shooting in Texas. And so we paused a little bit of our efforts just to, you know, maybe a longer moment of silence this week. But, you know, it's tough because it immediately gets politicized. Oh,
people are ghouls about these issues. I mean, they really are. And you know, what the left is doing with this, it's, you just know, they're excited by these events to push a political point. I mean, they, and this is not every Democrat or anything like that. It's horrific to the vast majority of people, but the people who derive power, they thrive on this stuff. I mean, the second they see this, they jump into action and they want to capitalize on it. And it's horrible. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, on the right, you know, I see this a lot of times, you know, Breitbart, anytime an illegal immigrant kills an American, they'd love to run those stories. You know, I mean, it's just people. I did a Carlin thing earlier that just talks about the fact that really politics just destroys people. To me, the humanity of people, because this is a very easy thing to look at and say, it's just absolutely horrific across the board. Nothing else left to be said about that.
Absolutely. I can't even wrap my head around how those parents must feel. And I've certainly shed some tears and had some prayers this week, you know, as you know, for humanity. I mean, the way that I see people behaving around this is what is so, is what also is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Why? Because this is a time when we should come together and unite for these families and for these children who are lost, these precious angels. And like, I just, you know, just really, it gets down to your soul a little bit. If you don't feel that, if you don't really feel that, that compassion, that empathy, if you don't have that, it leaves me struggling to see, like, what kind of a person are you? Right.
Yeah.
And so we've seen a lot of things. I was listening to you part of the way here, but prior to coming on the show this morning, I was listening.
Nice save.
Yeah, there. I was listening. I was on satellite radio, and I was listening to actually a faith-based program, and they were interviewing a young girl who has an album out this week, right? She's a singer. She's, you know, she's debuting some songs, and in between, they were doing some interviews with her about the songs, and one of the songs that she has coming out on this album talks about what you do first thing in the morning. And I found this, you know, and I don't mind saying this. I think anyone who knows me knows I'm a person of faith. You know, I don't wear it deep down inside my pocket. It's pretty much on the shirt sleeve, right? But I think what she said made so much sense when you think about society. What is the first thing you do in the morning? And I know I'm guilty of this. I get up. I want to check the news. I want to see what's going on in the local news here in Mississippi. I check Facebook. Social media platforms. Maybe I'm posting things. Maybe I'm doing stuff. And it's kind of the nature of the beast. It's part of the job. It's part of life. But she talked about, what if everybody started their day just slightly different, right? What if every day they did something that
positive?
Was right, positive, right? Something positive. And whether that's taking that time to, you know, read your Bible or say a prayer or just reflective thought even about, you know, your day and what you're going to do with it and who you're going to help, right? Who you're going to do this. John Maxwell has been a mentor of mine for many, many years. He, in Florida, he was on our pastoral staff as a teaching pastor at our church. And, you know, one of the things he talks about is adding value to people, right? And every day is these 5 points. I don't know if I can repeat all of them, but it's like you get up and you think about adding value to people. And, you know, then you really dwell on it to the point of like, how am I going to do that today, right? I'm going to create value, I'm going to add value, and I'm going to figure out how I can value others. If we just started our day like that, what would the world be like? Well, how quickly could we actually change?
Well, I'll tell you, and it may just be me, and I'm so cynical and jaded and everything. I swear, I think a lot of people would have that, you know, everybody would have the same emotion towards this event. Everybody would have the same sympathy. America is great about just pouring out support for people, hurricanes, things like this. Politics destroys it all. I'm telling you, I just look at it and I call myself an observer because I really just watch all of this stuff. And I believe that's how human beings would be. I mean, I believe if we took all this nastiness out and this political wrangling about stuff, that's what people would do. They would wake up and think about their day differently. They would go about their entire lives differently if they didn't think they had this enemy, you know, just right across the cubicle from them. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll come back with Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. We do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with representatives from Americans for Prosperity, and today we've got State Director Starla Brown in with us. So, Starla, I know you've got some things you wanted to talk about, but I had made some notes. One of the things that I want, y'all are doing this, what was it, pay more, get less? Is that what, or?
Yeah, so it's the True Cost of Washington tour campaign, and our hashtag is pay more, get less. So if you're on social media, you can go to that hashtag. You'll see a lot of posts. One of the things that we've been doing, and we are going to bring this to Mississippi, will be in Forest, Mississippi. Haven't set the date yet, but we're working on that today. Hopefully we'll get that finalized, and hopefully next week we can give you some more announcements on it. But we've been going to gas stations around the country and rolling back the price of a gallon of gas for a short period of time. And yeah, rolling back. But it's we're rolling it back to what it was on January 21st in 2021, right? So
yeah.
we're rolling it back to what it was on that day. That's a very specific day for a lot of people. I think they get it. But and we're giving people a little break for a little while, and we're getting our message. And what we're seeing is, yesterday I heard from one of the people, we had an event this week in Las Vegas that was off the charts. We had one in Illinois yesterday. And I understand that at the end of the event, there were still 200 cars in line, lining up to get this gas prices rolled back. The sad piece of this is we're documenting and recording a lot of stories. People are sharing their stories about the hardships that they're facing over this. And interestingly enough, we've had people who were not knowing what they were going to do. They were on fumes and they were like trying to work. Like they weren't just out driving around.
Right.
They were literally trying to wonder how they were going to afford the gas for the rest of the day to do their job, and were able to roll in and get a little more gas because we were there. But one of the things we're doing is we're sharing that message. Our activists are coming out. They're sign waving. We're doing that. And so when we put this together in Forest, Mississippi, we want to make sure we get some people to come out and join us.
Oh, you will.
I'm sure.
That'll be your easiest attractor.
Easiest attractor.
I got to tell you, though. I mean, I love it. Should you not roll back the price to 1971 when they took us off the gold standard,
right,
when inflation really started kicking off in this country? Maybe to 1913. I'm down with y'all going back to 1913 prices. What would that probably be, 2 cents a gallon?
Yeah,
I know that might be a little pricey for you. But, you know, when the Federal Reserve was created, you know, when you look at this inflation, here's the thing, the question that I have, though. It's not going to get better like it did in the 1980s. Because if they raise interest rates like they did in the 1980s, we collapse our economy because everybody is so indebted. If you take all of these corporations, all of these individuals, all these people who want to buy houses or have houses they need to refinance, if you take them from 1% to 3% interest rates and you move them up to 19%, everything comes to a screeching halt. So they cannot do what they did in the 1980s. But we had some opportunity to mitigate some of these inflationary effects in 2017 and 2018, when you had the businessman Donald Trump in the presidency and you had the Republican-controlled House and Senate. And they did nothing but grow the size of government. And I would assume that part of your talking to people is understanding that it is the size of government and the need to print money to fund this massive government that creates inflation in the first place. If Donald Trump and a Republican GOP controlled House and Senate only grew government then, how does this ever, I mean, is there any way to fight inflation without shrinking government?
No. And I think one of the reasons when you said that about, you know, what our messaging is, the campaign is called The True Cost of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
We have to cut spending. It's a huge piece of it.
But they are not going to do it.
Well, that is where the American people have to engage,
yes.
Right? You have to be engaging. You have to talk to your leaders. Now, you know, in some states, you've got great leaders. You've got some people who are out there on the front lines really fighting this. Unfortunately, they probably a lot of times are the minority, but you've got to talk to the people. And constituents out there, whether you're politically motivated, maybe you're not that person who's engaged all the time, but if you're hurting because of this,
you need to get engaged.
Right? Like, this is a time for you not to say, hey, you don't have to become the political savant, right? And everything about it. What you do know is you're paying more, you're getting less, the government's printing money, the government's spending, the government's growing in leaps and bounds. And none of those things are the answers, right?
Right.
Energy abundance. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about how even the denial for these new leases for oil production, right? Like, this has been a big topic in the news. So you can do at least one thing. You can pick up the phone. If you're out there, you're someone who voted to put that person in office. I don't care what political party they are.
Yeah.
If you voted to put them in office, call them. Now, maybe they're on the right side of things, right? And if you got somebody, maybe call them and thank them. Thank them and have them continue to do that. But if they're not on the right side, call them. Ask them to get on the right side. Start talking about what could solve the problem with them and start making sure consistently. And if you know that message, and if you don't, we'll be, get in touch with us. We'll be happy to help you with it. But if you know the message, you know the solutions, you know what they need to do. If you're going to do it, go find five friends. Go find five family members who also vote and have them do the same. Because I will tell you, burn up those phones. Like, do it do it and make sure that you're doing it in mass numbers. They need to hear from you. Because one of the things that I find from time to time in working over the years, even before AFP, with in different organizations or different mindset, is that people get apathetic when they don't hear from you. They get apathetic. And hearing from you on that phone is one of the greatest things that you can do to have your voice be heard. Generally only takes a few minutes of your time. But if you're out there hurting and you need to talk to someone, that's a good someone to talk to is the elected official you put in office.
Well, yeah, I like your message because you're going against a lot of things. People are convinced, in a lot of cases, they're convinced that inflation is the fault of Vladimir Putin. They're convinced that it is the fault of greedy corporations. They're convinced it's the fault of anything except for government spending. And government spending is what drives this. Now, here's the other kicker, too. It's Republicans that spend that same money.
Yep.
Donald Trump is responsible for inflation, just like Joe Biden, as is Barack Obama, as is George W. Bush. I mean, it was the Republicans back in Congress. This is when I left the Republican Party. And I don't know if this maybe not what anybody wants to hear necessarily, but Bush and the Republicans are the ones that passed Medicare Part D. It was the largest entitlement since LBJ. And it's huge, massive spending on pharmaceutical drugs for seniors. They took the cost off of seniors and transitioned it to the federal government, which meant they had to print up money to pay for that stuff. You're up against a lot to try to explain inflation to people, and it's on the right and the left. So many people so badly misdiagnose it that even if they pick up that phone and just complain about it, most of the time they're not getting to the root cause of it. And so the politician didn't get the message that they should get, which is you need to cut spending. And I mean, they, to save this ship right now, and maybe the Fed having to raise rates above the inflation rate actually causes the government to spend less money. There's a possibility of that because our interest expense is going to be so high. But save something like that. If people do not demand a smaller government, this is, I think this is a game over event. It's going to be a huge financial crisis. And what we come out on the other side is what scares me.
Yeah. I mean, there's no end in sight. And, you know, I was in Missouri last week. We were out there with our colleagues there with another entity, actually knocking some doors there in the state, but attending a national conference for all of our colleagues. We talked about that earlier, right? And we drove back from Missouri. It was about a 10-hour drive, and I'm going through Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Mississippi to get home. And we never saw, I mean, I drove about, I think Kate drove 4 hours of the leg and I drove six. And, but paying attention as I'm going past gas stations, just looking at prices, right? Just kind of getting a feel for it. We never saw gas below $4.09 a gallon.
Yeah.
And $4.15 was more what I would say the average price was that we saw when we're in some places where it's harder to get to. You're driving through the Ozarks, right?
So
getting delivered there has its challenges. But, and I was amazed because I could have taken that same trip 6 months ago. It still would have been high. But, I mean, you think about how much gas is jumping up sometimes overnight. I mean, you know, we've had nights where, you know, nickel, 11 cents. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is, you know, within a state, certain states have county governments or have other local taxes that can get applied to a gallon of gas. You know, sometimes those are for noble things. It might be to fund something for education. They might be things that people, you know, got agreed on. Maybe they went to maybe have gone to the voting booth and voted to have that tax for a period of time to pay for a particular good use of government. A lot of times it's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are people sitting in just some areas just because of the circumstances of where they live. They're already, you know, I know where I lived previously, I was paying 6-7 cents a gallon more in the county I lived in than if I just, you know, so a lot of times if I was heading out of town, I had enough gas to get the 30, I'll save myself those, you know, I'll save myself a few dollars, right? So I you're right though, but the spending has got to get under control. You know, where does it end? And right now it looks like we're not headed.
It's accelerating.
It's just accelerating, like at a very fast pace. And sometimes when I hear the Biden administration talking about inflation, right? And we talked about the speech he gave on inflation, which was so ill-wrought with inaccuracies.
Oh, it was so bad.
It was just so bad. When we talk about the solutions, it becomes apparent it's an agenda. And I think part of the acceleration here is coming because November's coming.
Yeah.
And there could be.
Right. They're panicking. They need to get
panicking,
it done
right,
now.
Because that, and so you see some things accelerate and you think, wow, what's going on? Don't think for a moment that November isn't in their minds in this agenda to accelerate bad policy,
right?
Versus good. Because if things go as I would expect they would go, if the American people really are fed up and they use their voting ability to make the change that they need to make in their community and where they live, they lose power. They lose majority. And in that scenario, none of this gets past the spending part, though.
Right. That's the problem.
That's about both sides.
The midterms will solve nothing on inflation. Because the Democrats love the welfare state. The Republicans love the warfare state. Now, actually, the Democrats seem to love the warfare state, too. The Democrats are just on the wrong side of every single issue, even the ones they used to be good at. But yeah, so if people do not understand that it is the government spending that drives us. Here's the frustrating thing to me as a libertarian. Libertarians have been standing on the sideline screaming about the coming inflation and what happens if you print money like this for decades, really, for the smartest ones, but particularly since we came out of the 2008 financial crisis. QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4, QE5, Operation Twist, all of this stuff is a disaster in the making. Nobody paid any attention to it. Now it's here. So libertarians are saying, see, we told you this would happen. We warned you. And now people are looking at it and they're misdiagnosing it even now. It's like even now when it's smacking them in the face, they cannot understand that it is this money printing that creates this level of inflation. So the Republicans will get in. And when the Republicans get in there, there will be another $40 billion that goes to Ukraine almost immediately. Mitch McConnell says he can't give them enough fast enough. We need to give them anything they need as much as fast as they need it. We just need to get that money printed. You know what I mean? So it solves nothing. So the midterms would be great installing out some of these more lunatic things on the left, no doubt about it. It will have no effect on inflation unless people learn what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike, that's a that's an area for us as an organization. We have our education and training division of Americans for Prosperity. And the ENT team, housed within that is our Grassroots Leadership Academy. And we've certainly had some people go through some of that training here in Jackson, and we're expanding that. We actually have coming up on June 11th, we have a policy boot camp. Now we're covering some more of some state-based type legislation in that, but also some skills training. And then there's a follow-up to that that will actually train people how to be better at activism. One of the things that I think that we're trying to do, especially with this, you know, the true cost of Washington, because it is the spending, right?
Yes.
And that's what we talk about in that campaign. One of the reasons we're doing this all over and calling national attention to it, the media has been great. They've been coming out. They've been covering it. Elected officials are attending some of these gas station events. And I think what our objective there is, you know, not only just to draw attention to inflation, but also, like you said, so people understand what it is.
Yes.
Right? To really understand what's going on here. And so, you know, you know, there's a list of things that, you know, we've talked about on the show that we want to see doing. You know, energy abundance was one of them. But definitely driving down spending. And there's so many times that Washington, where it's so out of control with spending and everything else, is you cannot spend your way out of inflation.
No.
You cannot spend your way out of debt. You cannot spend your way into a prosperous nation.
Yeah.
You can't do it that way.
Well, that's the thing. So, that's, you know, and what I suspect Democrats are going to do ahead of the midterms, Gavin Newsom's already proposing it in California. They're going to start printing up money and sending it to people to adjust for, you know, I think Gavin Newsom was talking about $450 to every registered Californian to help them offset higher gas prices, which creates more inflation.
Right.
And I can imagine the federal government before the midterms, you know, wiping away $1 trillion of student loans, which will create more inflation. Because that's more, you know, that's $1 trillion of money receivable to the federal government that's gone. Well, they got to make up that somehow. They're going to print it up. So all of these things they're doing. I called this on the show the other day, and I had a woman tell me that she thinks I'm being too dark on the show. I call it that we're in a doom loop right now. And the only way to interrupt that is for people to catch on. And it's got to be Republicans and Democrats because they've got to hold their own people accountable. We fall in love with political parties. We blame the other side for everything when our side is complicit in doing it, too, and we don't hold them accountable to it. And until this is understood, I think we're about to learn we're in the middle of a very painful lesson, yet we still don't know what that lesson is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, a lot of people get very stuck on a false narrative when it comes to free trade as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's an issue. You know, maybe we'll do a show on trade.
Oh, I could do that.
Yeah. I'm sure we should talk more about that. But that's another issue that we have right now is, you know, you've got people on the right fighting like we don't want to trade with anyone. Well, that free trade is drives costs down, right? And it's, you know, it's an involuntary action. If I want to pay you a certain amount for a good and you want to give me this in return, that's a free and voluntary action between us. It's great. It's great for both parties. I get something, you get something. There's mutual benefit in that. And so it's, you know, the notion that we need to control trade. And you know, people start talking about tariffs and things like that. Look, tariffs are a tax. There's no other way to describe them, and consumers pay them.
People were convinced over the past 4 years during the Trump administration that the Chinese paid all the taxes and that no Americans paid any of those things. I don't know how they accomplished this, but somehow they tricked Americans into believing that charging a 30% surcharge on a product never flows through to the consumer.
Right, right. Well, and you've seen in the steel industry, you know, you had a lot of talk about that. Oh, I'm doing this, and you know, with these 25% tariffs imposed. But on the other side of that, what a lot of people don't know is there were a lot of waivers given out. So on one side, the president, other people were talking about we're going to impose these tariffs on steel, and you know, and it's going to be, you know, this 25% or whatever. Which, by the way, again, it's a tax.
Right.
Consumers pay it.
Which is inflationary.
Right. So all these countries were, you know, lining up and, you know, they're saying, oh, this is great. We're going to really stick it to them. But at the same time, there were waivers given out to so many countries that it actually didn't, in some cases, didn't even happen. Right. And so, you know, that's a, you know, that's another place that we need to look at. And if you truly believe in free trade, then it's between those two parties, right?
Right.
Freely are trading with each other. We have a game that we play called the trading game sometimes in our classes. And I'd be happy to do that in the office sometimes. I think it's a very simplistic game. An 8-year-old could do
it,
right?
That's what we need. That's what we need.
but it would explain what free trade is.
Yeah.
So.
All right. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Starla Brown. We could talk about this forever. we may keep doing it when we come back. All right. Stick around. We're talking to Starla Brown, American Express.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we're back talking to Starla Brown from American Prosperity. Starla, we got a short segment here, but I'm going to pose something here that would be wildly unpopular. I think that the middle class in the United States needs a massive tax increase. I think that every middle-class American in this country should have their taxes doubled or tripled, and I'm not even joking. Now, I hate taxes, but if you want to see the spending stop, people have to feel the pain. They have to do it. You know, how much of that $54 billion, this is just the opening of the Ukraine war that they spent in 10 weeks, how much of that would have been sent if the government looked to the people, and particularly the middle class, which is the biggest chunk of us, the working class, the middle class, and said, hey, we're going to be sending out a bill. We need another $54 billion. So everybody's got to send in a little bit more this month. What's happened in this country that has allowed this inflation and our government to grow to this size is this money printing. So what they've been able to do, and Republicans are especially guilty of this, what Republicans do is they come out and they say, we're going to give you a tax cut. And Republicans cheer. I'm for zero income taxes. So a tax cut's in the right is just a good start to me. It is not an accomplishment. What Trump did was not an accomplishment. It was a start to me. But if the middle class, if the Americans had to pay for the government they are getting, it would stop. We've been able to hide it in the background. This inflation that they are paying, like you're going to be pointing out at your events, the inflation they are paying right now is that tax for the government they tried to hide from you. Through all this borrowing and all this debt and all this money printing, instead of charging the middle class directly for wars and welfare and the bureaucracy, they printed it up and hid it behind the thing. Now it's out. Now this is the tax. You're paying for this big government now. But the only way, there's got to be a response mechanism by the public to government spending. If the government wants to spend more money, they need to go to the people and take it from them. They need to, you know, and I mean, I don't agree with anything. You know, to me, the government should be about 4% the size it is right now and leave everybody's income alone. But if we're going to sit by and allow the government to do what it does, then we need to pony up the money, because what we're doing right now is not only insane and we're all paying the price for it, but it's disgusting to me to know that we are leaving this to our children to figure out. You got kids graduating now. They got no hope of owning a home right now. The student loans are through the roof because we've made college so expensive because of this money printing. I mean, we have handed our children a crap sandwich. The middle class of today, the people that are working, they're already taking a good chunk of money from the wealthy. Maybe on a percentage basis, they get less. But I mean, the fact that what Elon Musk paid $16 billion in taxes, I think that covers, you know, I think he's paid his fair share.
Right.
So it's the middle class, really, that has been given some of the biggest free ride in this thing. Now, I know a lot of conservatives disagree with that. I don't want this big government. Well, then quit voting for it. Quit allowing Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Michael Guest to vote in this bigger government. And all before and after him, Benny Thompson, all of them. The middle class, there needs to be a response mechanism to where people immediately feel pain. You know, there's some people who have a condition where their nerve endings don't work quite right. They don't feel pain. And you would think to yourself on first blush, man, wouldn't that be great?
Right.
You know, somebody could accidentally fall and smack my head into a wall and I wouldn't even feel it.
Right.
But what happens is these people end up dying horrible deaths because they've got their hand on a stove and they don't realize it. They burn the crap out of their hand and then it gets infected and, you know, they have a serious problem in their hand. You need a pain mechanism, and we have cut that pain mechanism off, and it has allowed this government to metastasize, and we pretend like we're able to just keep this going because it wasn't affecting us. That inflation you're seeing right now, now you're feeling it.
Yeah. And it's especially affecting the middle class. I mean, obviously, look, the least among us are hurting the worst.
Yes.
But the middle class is starting to get hit because the inflation.
And the upper middle class.
Right. And the upper middle class, because inflation is so high and there's so many things. You know, one of our brands, the Libre Initiative, they're actually doing something a little bit different than we're doing at the gas station we talked about. They're going into the grocery stores.
Yeah.
And they're looking at those they're doing that and working in the Hispanic community around that. And, you know, I remember, I don't know, it was, gosh, I think it was even before I moved to Mississippi. It was early this year. So one night, like, hey, look, let's just order out a steak, you know, have DoorDash come or whatever. And typical restaurant gone to for many years, all of a sudden that steak is $10 more than it was the last time, you know, it had been ordered. And I'm like, wow. I mean, it, you know, it hit me. But I see it. I see it at the grocery store. I'm a price checker and looker, right?
I mean,
some people go in and, you know, we just throw things in the cart. We don't look. And I have days like that, too. But there's a lot of things that I'm cognizant of what they cost. And there's definitely increases out there. You see it across the board. I mean, even the stuff typical things you buy on Amazon, you can go back and look what you paid for it.
Right.
You know,
you know,
6 months ago, what you're paying for it now. I mean, it's clearly there. But that hits the middle class because all these things add up. And, you know, we've seen different numbers. We've seen 5,200 thrown around. We've seen, oh, it's this much a month or it's that. But it's really happening.
Yeah.
And the middle class is getting hit. And, you know, the government might, like you said, the government should have just said, like, hey, we're going to do these incredibly bad pieces of policy that are going to create this train wreck of an economy. It's going to create, you know, just incredible inflation like we've never, the highest we've ever seen. Right. And we're going to do that. And so we need you to pay. You're right. They could have just sent a bill. And that would have probably hit people more direct.
Absolutely.
It's taken a while for, I think, a lot of people to have that realization about how much more they're spending.
Well, I think it's like health. You know, I do a health show here, too. And one of the things is that Americans ingest things that are bad for their health. If it doesn't kill them tomorrow or make them really sick the next day, they think it must be safe. It's okay. I'll be all right. And they get 20 years down the road and they end up with really horrible chronic conditions based on lifestyle things. They have just decided, well, I didn't really notice it that day. I'm sure just, you know, in moderation, that kind of stuff. That's what we've done economically. We've just allowed these things to just take place. We just didn't really want to pay it. I don't want to pay attention to it. Who wants to talk about the Federal Reserve outside of that weird Mike Madison guy? Well, I mean, you know, when you come whining to me now about inflation, I'm just really kind of nonplussed because, you know, there's so many people that have been trying to warn you of this and it's here now. You know, I mean, the dollar store now is now they're clinging to the name because they don't want to have to change the signage.
Right.
But it's the dollar and a quarter store or the dollar 50 store now.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How long before it's the $5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and hey, I mean, you know, at the rapid rate we're going, I mean, you know, if you had told me in January, now look, all the indicators were out that, you know, gas was going to continue to go up. But the thought process of, you know, even for a little while, I'm like, and I do this, right? This is what I do for a living, right? This is what I, you know, this, I'm not just in, you know, an advocate. It's my vocation as well. But to look and think that we'd still be here. But you know what? As long as the Biden administration continues to not look at real solutions and continues to throw more money at it, the inflation is going to keep going up. There's no end in sight because there's no solutions There's no real good policy out there being considered. And every time you hear the solutions they have, and, you know, I shared the one that I thought was just so absurd about heating oil prices. The way to, you know, how you deal with those high heating oil prices is we're going to subsidize weather stripping for homes, and that's going to help people because they won't lose the heat out of their homes, and so they'll use less, so it won't matter if it costs more anyway, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, no logic. Yeah. Just no logic there.
No.
So, you know, this is where we are.
Yeah. The prescriptions are just making the disease worse and worse and worse and worse, and there is, I think there's no way out. I mean, there's going to be a choice between government austerity and austerity for the people coming. I have a belief that's going to be put on the people. It already is. The government is the one that needs austerity, not us.
Hey, you know, you can download Bastiat's The Law free on the internet. You want to read about taxation, and I'm a firm believer of taxation is theft.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm I follow that school of thought very, very much so. And but you can download that book, and it's an old book, right? I mean, you know, it's been around for a long time. But the pillage and plunder part is something to think about, and what is the actual proper role of government. And so I encourage people, you know, go online, get the PDF version, download it, print it out if you don't want to read it, you know, on your on your iPad, your laptop screen or whatever, or on your phone where it's a little small. But I encourage people to read that book.
Is he Frederic, or how do you say his first name?
Frederic.
Okay. Bastiat.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm always
That's how I've always pronounced it. Not, you know, I'm originally from Mississippi, so I don't always pronounce things correctly.
You sound like you've got a French flair. All right, we got to take a quick break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity. So, Starla, tell us a little bit about your event. You get me going on economics, and I'll take up the hour. So go ahead.
That's okay. It's a topic we need to have discussions about, right?
Yes.
June 11th on Saturday, we have an event in our office in Ridgeland. You can go to Americans for Prosperity, Mississippi page to get the actual event on Facebook. If you're not on Facebook and you just want to reach out, Stone Clanton is our grassroots engagement director here in the Jackson area. You can reach him at first initial last name Clanton, which is Clanton at afphq.org. So it's S Clanton at afphq.org, and he can get you registered. We have a registration link. We're just doing that so we make sure we have enough food for everybody for lunch, and it's going to start at 9 a.m. We're going to do a policy boot camp. So it's almost a day-long event. I think it ends at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And we're going to be discussing a couple of different things. Certificate of need is one in the healthcare industry, because we believe that the government should not tell a private investor whether or not they can open a clinic, a hospital, or any type of entity. That shouldn't be up to the government to decide and determine that. Let a free market work. We're all about driving down the cost of health care, making it more affordable and accessible for people. So we want to educate people on that piece of policy, but we're going to talk about a lot of other things. And there's a little training thrown in there, too. We're going to talk about what it's like to work with people who don't agree with you, right? And how to do that approach. And so we're going to learn several pieces of policy, and it's going to be a great day to come out. If you are interested in getting engaged in some of the state level policy here in Mississippi, come on out, learn more about it, figure out where you might fit in. Maybe it's not even something we talk about that
right,
day.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Might be other stuff. There's several pieces working on. Maybe education in the K-12 pieces is an area where you want to see improvements in the state. But we're doing one here. We're going to be doing these around the state, but we're kicking the one off on June 11th here. And again, it's at our office in Ridgeland. It's a Saturday, so come join us.
And I think, you know, a lot of people don't get engaged because they really don't know how. It's very, you know, the government is so, there's such a bureaucracy. Politicians at most levels have really been so separated from people. You know, it's very interesting. They're supposed to be representatives, and somehow they have become leaders. You know, I don't know if this is subtle, if this has always been that way, but they're supposed to be representing. I mean, they are supposed to actually go and take your you know, their constituents' desires and needs and whatevers, and go and represent those people. What it seems like it's just been kind of flipped on its head to where they go, we have no contact with them. Now, at the state level, you got a better chance. You know, the closer your government is, the more responsive it's going to be, because you can reach out and really touch them. But they don't seem to always be representatives as much as they are. We just kind of wait to see what they've decided, and then we all live with the consequences of it. And it seems like that relationship needs to be kind of reframed.
Yeah, you know, I go back to a John Maxwell definition of leadership. It's how you influence others, right? So I'm hopeful that legislators are doing the right thing. They're being influenced by their constituents' needs and by what their constituents need in their districts. But then the influence is on their peers, right? And so if you know that this policy is good policy and it's policy that we should be passing, I hope what they're doing is actually, if they're going to lead, let them lead within the body, right, as representatives, and talk to others about why we should vote on this. And so, you know, one of the things that we do is provide a lot of information. We work with other organizations out there around the country in the policy sphere, because we really, in Americans for Prosperity is really more about the policy than the politics, right? Yeah. Because we know that two things, our North Star and what drives us is my life is only going to be infinitely better if your life is infinitely better. And that's something we sort of call mutual benefit, right? So your success, my success and your success depend on each other. You know, there's four key institutions, and we work primarily in the key institution of government. The other three are community, business, and education. And we work in those pieces as well as a part of the Stand Together community. And so the important thing to remember here is that top-down approaches don't work. They don't solve problems. No. Bottom-up approaches. And communities and individuals, when we unleash and break the barriers that prohibit them from doing things like opening a business, having the choice for their kids on education, things that get rid of barriers to economic prosperity, right? Whether it's occupational licensing, maybe it's those taxes we're talking about, certainly the inflation at the federal level, right? When we remove those kind of things for both individuals, for businesses, and communities can prosper. And we have to be focused on those kind of things. We have to be focused on policy at the state level. It's important. It impacts our lives sometimes more than it than the federal level does, right? I mean, it's, you know, there's a good balance there. We work on both levels. But the state policy that impacts what we do each and every day, what I think, and we have great opportunity here in Mississippi, is to really change things for the better. And I'm excited about what we're going to be talking about over the next year and into next session. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity here in Mississippi. And I think, look, there's some good things that happen.
When you're at the bottom of the heap, there's always a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, there's only one way but up, right? But here's the thing. There are, you know, look, we didn't get elimination of the income tax. Still going to keep working on that. That can still happen. But we did get a historic reduction, right? And so, you know, the thing that I tell people to understand is, we're in this for the long term, not the short term.
Yeah, God bless y'all, because I don't know how you have the patience for it.
Yeah, because short-term gains can look like whack-a-mole, right? Like, okay, let's take the you know, mallet, let's hit something over here, and let's hit something over there, and put all these Band-Aids on things. But when you pass policy that's transformative, right, that creates a paradigm shift and really, really changes not only that policy and what it does for the people, but when you can impact the people to be part of that paradigm shift and to change the way their assumptions, the lens they view the world through, and those are things we work on, right? That's a little bit different approach than a lot of things, because that grassroots side is not just out there saying, hey, you should tell them to vote for this bill. If you think that's all we do, that's a wrong perspective. We're asking people to really take a look at that piece of policy, to look at it through a different lens, and really change and consistently change what they do and think every day about how government should work.
Well, y'all have a lot of education to do, because we're an economically illiterate country, unfortunately. And
the thing
is, this, you know, this inflation stuff, this may be a good time for a teachable moment. You know, this may be the time that people start to to get engaged with it because it's finally hitting them. I think we have been blissfully unaware for the last 40 years. They learned a little bit of that lesson in the 1970s. And then we went off and on this grand experiment, and I think this is going to be a teachable moment where if people are willing to listen and not blinded by partisanship and just willing to accept, you know, to really fix it, maybe you may have you'll have an opening. You're going to have a more receptive audience now to explain these things to than when they didn't even notice that there was a problem.
Yeah, sure. And so. We have another event. It's out a little bit outside the area here, but we're June 21st will be over in Meridian, which is my hometown, so I'm excited about that. We're right in the middle of putting that together, but we're going to be in the what looks like the historic 3-foot building. As a child, I used to love to go over there and go up and down the elevators, but we're going to put some things together in that community, and we're going to continue to do this throughout the state, right?
Okay.
And really hoping to get that message out, because like you said, education and knowledge is key to people understanding what's happening at any level of government. You need to have that knowledge in order to be able to understand. But we also want to train individuals. There are a lot of people out there in some other groups, like Moms for Liberty, for example, is a great group, right?
Right.
And we're working on a national perspective now and a new piece of our education and training team where it's a B2B perspective, where we're going to go out. There's a lot of other groups out there doing stuff, but some of them maybe just need to know how to more effectively mobilize
and train.
And so we've got opportunities. So if you're a leader of a national, a chapter of a national organization, and you think your organization needs some training to be more effective at what you do and the policy you're working on, we can help you with that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. One more segment. Starla Brown, stick with us. We'll be right back.
All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will it catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we're back with Starla Brown. Starla, we only got a couple of seconds left here. Tell them where they can find you online.
All right, so you can find us on Facebook at Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, our Facebook page. Our events will all be on there. AmericansForProsperity.org is our website. And so you can go there. We also have an events page as well. And we hope everybody will come out on June 11th to our office in Ridgeland. We're looking forward to the policy boot camp.
All right, we'll talk about it again before the event. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see
no
you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.